This is the NBC University Theater, bringing you the sixth in our series of dramatizations of outstanding works by modern British and American authors. Today's play is Justice by John Galsworthy, starring Nigel Bruce in the role of Coxon and with Mr. James Hilton as our intermission commentator.
Prosecution has accused me of trying to invest this case with romantic glamour. Gentlemen, I have done nothing of the kind. I'm merely trying to show you that background of life, that palpitating life, which, believe me, always lies behind the commission of a crime.
On a July morning in 1910, in the law offices of James Howe and his son Walter in London, the chariot wheels of justice began to roll.
And 5, 12, and 3, 15, 19, 23, 32, 41, and 24, 5, 7, 12, 17, 24, and 9, 13, and 21, 15, 25,
Mr. Coxon.
36,
Mr. Coxon.
40, what is it, Cheadle?
Party wants to see Folder.
What name?
Honeywell.
What's his business?
It's a woman.
A lady?
No, sir. A person.
Oh, all right. Ask her in.
Yes, sir. Come in, please.
You want to see Fowler?
Yes, please.
Well, I'm Coxon, the chief clerk. Please state your business.
It's a personal matter, sir.
Oh, that's against the rules. Supposing I had my friends bringing their troubles here now. That would never do now, would it?
No, sir.
Exactly. And here you are, waiting to see a junior clerk.
Please, I must.
Oh, it simply won't do. Supposing one of the partners... What's that commotion outside? Sweetle, Sweetle?
There's some kids out here.
They're mine, please.
Shall I hold them in check?
They're quite small, sir.
Well, you keep them quiet, Sweetle.
Right, sir.
Now, look here. You really mustn't take up time in office hours.
Please, it's terribly important.
Oh, very well, but only a minute, mind. It's not regular. Folder?
Yes, sir?
Come in here. You've got a visitor. You can use my office. I'll be back in a minute.
Where is he?
Well, he's on the drink again. He tried to kill me last night. I came out with the children before he was awake. Oh, Will, is it ready for tonight?
Yes, I've got the ticket. Meet me at 11:45 at the booking office.
Yes, Will.
And you must remember, we're man and wife, you understand? Man and wife.
I understand. Will... You're not afraid, are you? You want to go?
Oh, would I have gone this far if I didn't?
I had to leave the children's things. I was afraid I'd waken him.
Well, no matter. How much must you have now?
I could do with £6, I think.
Don't give away where you're going. And when we get away from here, perhaps we can forget all this.
If you're sorry, say so, Will. I'd sooner he killed me than take you against your wish.
Oh, I'm not sorry.
You've only to say it's not too late.
I'll have you. It is too late, Ruth. I'm not afraid. I'll have you. That's all I really want.
Will.
Here, you'd best go.
Kiss me, Will.
Oh, Ruthie. Ruthie. here's £7. Now, don't forget, 11:45.
I won't. Goodbye, Will.
Fowler?
Sir?
This isn't right, you know.
Well, it won't happen again, sir.
Well, it's an improper use of these premises.
No, I said, sir, that it...
I have a pamphlet here you'd better read, Folder. Purity in the Home. It's a well-written thing. Mind you, don't read it in the firm's time, though, will you?
Yes, sir.
£20. 30, 36, 30, 39.
Morning,
Coxon. Oh, good morning, Mr. Walter.
Walter?
Yes, Father.
Come in here a moment.
Morning, Father. I thought you told me yesterday the firm's balance was over £400.
That's right.
According to this bank book, it's 351, 351, and no recent check.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
Get the checkbook from your desk.
Yes, sir.
Now, check the pounds on the stubs.
Ready?
Yes, sir. 5, 54, 70.
Check.
28, 29, 11.
Right.
52, 73, 5, 1. Tally?
Yes. I don't understand it. Made sure it was over 400.
Let me see the book. What's this check for £90?
Who drew it?
You did.
I drew no check for £90.
July the 7th, Walter Howe, £90.
July the 7th? Oh. That's the Friday I went down to look over the Trenton estate.
Well, didn't you draw a check for expenses?
Yes, sir, but it was for £9. No. Wait a moment. Let me see that check.
Well?
Father, somebody's altered this check.
What?
My T-Y's curled back. This one doesn't. See?
Coulson!
Yes, sir?
Come in and shut the door. Just come here and carry your mind back a bit, Coulson. Do you remember cashing a check for Mr. Walter last Friday week?
Yes, sir. £9. Mr. Walter just gave me the check when my lunch came in. I remember it because, of course, I like my lunch hot. So I gave the check to Davis to take round to the bank. He brought back £9. You remember, Mr. Walter, he wanted some silver to pay the cab. Here, let me see. Oh, you've got the wrong check here, sir.
Afraid not, Coxon.
Oh, that's funny.
Now, let's get this straight. You gave it to Davis, and Davis sailed for Australia on Monday. That is rather black.
Sir, you're not suggesting that Davis committed a felony?
I'm not suggesting anybody did anything. Walter, ring up Scotland Yard. Then fetch the cashier from the bank. I want to question him. Now, Mr. Cowley, as cashier at the bank, you must be familiar with the members of my staff who cash checks.
Yes, sir.
You knew Mr. Davis?
Oh, yes, sir. The young man who went to Australia.
Do you remember his cashing this check for £90 last Friday?
£90? Let me see. Yes, I remember it. Only it wasn't Mr. Davis who cashed it.
No. Who cashed it, Mr. Cowley?
Why, sir, it was young Mr. Falder. Yes, sir, Mr. Falder.
You know this check, Falder?
No, sir.
You cashed it last Friday week. Look at it.
Oh, that one. Well, yes, sir. Davis gave it to me.
And you gave Davis the cash?
Yes, sir.
When Davis gave you the check, was it exactly like this?
Yes, sir.
Did you know that Mr. Walter drew this check for £9?
90, sir.
Nine, Falder.
Well, I don't understand.
The suggestion is, of course, that the check was altered. Whether by you or Davis is the question.
Mr. Jane, sir,
But take your time, Falder.
Not by me, sir.
Now, let me see. Davis was not here after Saturday, was he, Coulson?
No, sir.
Was he, Falder?
No, sir.
Then how do you account for the fact that the entry on the stub was altered from 9 to 90 after Saturday?
What's that?
It had to be, since this checkbook never left my son's pocket from the time he wrote the check until Monday morning. Well, Folder?
Sir,
do you deny you altered the entry on the stub so it would conform with the check which you also altered? Well?
No, sir. No, Mr. Howe. I don't deny it. I did it.
Good gracious me. What a thing to do.
So?
I needed the money so badly, I was all upset.
Well, how on earth did the thing that had come into your head?
It was a minute of madness, sir. Believe me, it was.
A long minute, Falder. 4 days to think it over before you altered this check stub.
I swear, I didn't realize what I'd done till afterwards. And then I hadn't the courage. Oh, Mr. Jane's overlook it, so I'll pay the money back. I promise I will.
Go to your desk, Falder.
Well, I wish, sir.
Go to your desk.
Yes, sir. What are you going to do, Father?
Prosecute.
It's his first offense.
I doubt that. too neat a bit of swindling altogether.
I shouldn't be surprised if he had temptations.
Life's one long temptation, Coxon.
Well, I'm speaking of the flesh and the devil, Mr. James. There was a woman come to see him this morning.
Oh, his wife?
No, sir. No relation. A married person, though.
How do you know that?
She brought her children. They were outside the office.
Well, we've turned up a really rotten egg, eh? I should like to give him a chance. Must have been a temptation of the moment. A man doesn't succumb in a moment if he's of clean mind and habits. This one's rotten. He's got the eyes of a man who can't keep his hands off money.
We hadn't noticed that before.
I've seen a lot of those fellows in my time. No doing anything with them except to keep them out of harm's way.
What it would mean prison if you prosecute.
They're nasty places, prisons, I've heard.
I see no alternative. Out of the question to keep him in this office.
Put yourself in his place, Father.
You ask too much of me, Walter.
Well, supposing that I were to have a talk with him, sir. We don't want to be
hard. That'll do, Coxon, and I've made up my mind.
Well, perhaps you're right, sir. We must have protection.
Confound it, Coxon, and why don't you back me
out? Walter, he's only a boy,
sir. I'll hear no more. Do you understand? No more.
Yes, Father. The quality of mercy is not strained.
The old truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Your name?
Robert Coxon.
You are managing clerk to the firm of solicitors who employ the prisoner?
Yes, sir. 29 years.
How long had the prisoner been in their employ?
2 years, less 17 days.
And you've had him under your eye all that time?
Yes, sir, except on Sundays and holidays.
Hmm. And what have you to say about the prisoner's character, Mr. Coxon?
Well, sir, he's a nice, pleasant-spoken young man. I found no fault with him. Quite the contrary. It was a great surprise to me that...
Yes, Miss Coxon. On the morning of the 7th of July, the morning the cheque was altered, what is there to say about his behaviour that morning?
Well, if you ask me, I don't think he was quite compos.
Are you suggesting that he was insane?
No, compos, Your Honour.
Be a little more specific, Mr. Coxon.
Just tell us, Mr. Coxon.
Well, for one thing, his collar was unbuttoned. Now, I like a young man to be neat, so I said to him, your collar's unbuttoned.
And what did he answer?
Nothing. He just stared at me. There was a look in his eyes.
Will you describe the look?
Funny-like.
Had you ever seen such a look in his eyes before?
No, sir. I had either reported it to the partners. We can't have anything eccentric in our profession.
Was there anything else unusual that morning?
Well, yes, sir.
What?
A woman, sir.
Mr. Coxon, a moment ago you told counsel for the defense that the prisoner looked jumpy. Precisely what do you mean by that word?
Do you keep dogs, sir?
Answer the question, please.
Well, he looked like a dog that's lost its master, sort of everywhere at once with his eyes.
Thank you. It was coming to his eyes. You call them funny. What did you mean, strange?
Yes, sir. Funny.
What may be funny to you may not be funny to me or to the jury. Do they look frightened? Guilty?
Well, you make it very hard for me, sir. I'll give you one word and you want another.
Does funny mean insane?
No, not insane. Funny means...
Oh, very well. Now, his collar was unbuttoned, you said. Was it a hot day?
I think it was, sir. Fairly hot.
And did he button his collar when you called attention to it?
Yes, I think he did.
And would you say that that denoted insanity? It'll be all, thank you.
Name, please?
Ruth Honeywill.
Age?
26.
You are a married woman living with your husband.
A little louder, please.
No, sir. Not since July.
Have you any children?
Yes, sir. Two.
And are they living with you?
Yes.
You know the prisoner?
Yes.
What was the nature of your relationship with him?
We were friends.
Friends?
Lovers, sir.
In what sense do you use that word?
We love each other.
Oh, I understand, but how intimately?
Not intimately, your lordship.
Oh, continue, Mr. Frome.
Thank you, Lucian. What is the nature of your married life?
It's so bad talking about.
Did your husband ill-treat you?
Yes.
In what way?
I'd rather not say, all sorts of ways.
I'm afraid I must stop this, you know.
Mr. Porter offered to get me away from it. We were going away together.
Yes, quite. Mrs. Honeywill, do you remember the morning of Friday, July the 7th?
Yes.
Why?
My husband nearly strangled me that morning.
And did you tell your friend what had happened?
Yes, I wish I never had.
It upset him?
Dreadfully.
Did he ever speak to you about a check?
No, never.
Did he ever give you money?
Yes.
When?
On Saturday.
Why?
To buy some things for me and the children.
Did it surprise you?
What?
That he had money to give you.
Yes, because just before, when my husband abused me, he cried because he hadn't the money to get me away. He told me afterwards he'd won it.
When did you see him last?
The morning he was taken away. It was the day we were to have started.
Tell me, did you love the defendant very much?
Yes, sir.
Would you think your own unhappiness might affect his control over his actions?
Yes.
His reason, even?
For a moment, like, I think it would.
Do you still love him?
Yes, sir. Very much.
Thank you. Mr. Cleaver? Mrs. Honeywell, when you left Mr. Falder on the morning of Friday, July the 7th, you would not say he was out of his mind, I suppose.
No, sir.
Thank you. No further questions?
Well, just a moment, Miss Honeywell.
Your Honor?
I'd like to ask you a question. You said before your married life was an unhappy one. Ever faults on both sides?
I never bowed down to him. I don't see why I should, sir. Not to a man like that.
You refuse to obey him.
I've always studied him to keep things nice.
Until you met the prisoner. Is that it?
Even after.
I ask you these questions because you seem to glory in this affection of yours for the prisoner.
Yes, I do. It's the only thing in my life now.
What is your name?
William Falder.
Age?
23.
Married?
No, sir.
How long have you known the last witness?
6 months.
Is her account of the relationship between you a correct one?
Yes.
You knew she was a married woman, did you not?
I couldn't help it, Your Honor.
Couldn't help it?
I didn't seem able to.
Did you know she was happy with her husband?
I knew it was trouble all the time.
You knew her husband?
Only through her. He's a brute.
I will not allow indiscriminate abuse of a person not present.
Mr. Falder, do you admit altering this check?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Falder, will you tell the jury what happened on the morning of Friday, July the 7th?
I was having my breakfast when she came in. Her dress was torn and she couldn't seem to get her breath. Her arm was bruised and the blood had got into her eyes. It frightened me. And when she told me, I thought, well, it was too much, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, I couldn't work that morning. I was out of my senses for fear he'd do it again. And then Davis, the other clerk, he gave me the check. He said, it'll do you good to have a run over to the bank. And when I had the check in my hand, it just flashed across my mind that if I added a TY to the 9, why, there would be the money to get her away. It just came and went. I didn't realize I'd actually done it until I'd already pushed the check through to the cashier. When I got outside, I wanted to chuck myself under a bus.
And how far is it from your office to the bank?
Just a few yards, sir.
How long did you actually have the check in your possession before you cashed it?
Well, it couldn't have been more than 4 minutes. I ran.
And during those 4 minutes, you say you remember nothing?
Only that I ran.
Do you remember adding the TY to the 9?
No, sir, I don't really.
Your witness, Mr. Cleaver. Mr. Falder, divested of the romantic glamour which my friend is casting over this case, is it anything but ordinary forgery? Come.
I was half frantic all that morning, sir.
Oh, now, you don't deny the T.Y. was so like the rest of the writing as to deceive the cashier.
That was accidental.
And was it accidental that you altered the check stub 4 days later? Was it?
No.
To do that, you had to watch your opportunity, didn't you?
Yes.
Surely you don't suggest you were half frantic at that time.
I was haunted.
With fear of being found out?
Yes.
That will be all.
And if it pleases your lordship and members of the jury, nothing I can say will move you if the evidence has not already convinced you that the prisoner committed this act in a moment of complete irresponsibility. Gentlemen, the sight of brutal violence disturbs all of us in a very strange way, even when we have no personal interest in the matter. But when it is inflicted on a woman we love, can you doubt the prisoner's distress when she appeared before him on that morning? Gentlemen, men like this prisoner are destroyed every day by a law which wants for human insight. If this prisoner is found guilty and treated as a criminal type, he will, as experience shows, probably become one. Gentlemen, justice is a machine. Once someone has given it a start, it rolls on of itself. Is this young man to be ground to pieces under this machine for an act which at worst was one of weakness? I say he has already suffered enough. He has lain in prison for 2 months under this charge. Is he likely to forget that? Imagine the anguish in his mind during those months. Gentlemen, the chariot wheels of justice began to roll over this boy the moment Mr. James Howe decided to prosecute. We are now already at the second stage. If you permitted to go on to a third, I would not give that for his life.
And I call the attention of the jury to the fact that there's no question of innocence here, only sanity. If on the basis of the testimony you've heard, you conclude that the prisoner was insane at the time of the forgery, you will find him guilty, but insane. But if you think that the prisoner was sane, you will find him simply guilty. And I must warn the jury not to allow any considerations of age or temptation to influence you in finding your verdict. You may retire, gentlemen, if you please.
We find the defendant, William Folder, guilty.
And I do not feel, in the light of the evidence, I may exercise the powers of mercy accorded me the law. William Folder, you will go to penal servitude for 3 years.
From Hollywood, the NBC University Theater is bringing you Nigel Bruce in our adaptation of Justice, the sixth in this series of dramatizations of outstanding works by modern British and American authors. Information on how to obtain free materials on the authors and books presented in this series will be given at the close of the program. Now, here to comment on Galsworthy's work is a distinguished compatriot, Mr. James Hilton, author of Lost Horizon, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, So Well-Remembered, and many other outstanding novels. Our intermission commentator, Mr. Hilton.
This play of John Galsworthy, called Justice, was first produced at the Duke of York's Theatre, London, on February 21st, 1910. The date is significant, because a few months later, King Edward VII died, ushering out an era. And a few years later, in 1914, the first of the World Wars began, ushering out a world. Justice, therefore, was first played to fashionable London audiences that took for granted the security of Western civilization and could thus allow its structure to be criticized pretty freely by gentlemen. And Galsworthy was a gentleman. That is significant, too. His friend and fellow playwright, J.M. Barrie, once said of him, "Galsworthy would go to the stake for his opinions, but he would go courteously raising his hat." What Barrie called courtesy was part of something deeper. All Galsworthy's work is shot through with a cultivated, civilized anxiety to see the other fellow's point of view. Institutions are condemned, but not people. And Galsworthian villains, to use an old-fashioned term, are never darker than medium grey. Even Soames Forsyte, whom his creator disliked probably more than anyone else, becomes in the end pitiable rather than despicable. In Galsworthy's best work, this pity rises to sublimity. In his not-quite-so-good work, it descends to sentiment. And in this play, Justice, I think there are traces of both the sublimity and the sentiment. There is sublimity in the overall conception of a lonely human being caught in the cogs of a soulless and inexorable machine. There is sublimity also in the portrayal of the prison officials as personally rather decent people who had an unpleasant job to do. This was Galsworthy's great discovery, that some of the most hideous cruelties are regularly perpetrated by nice people doing what they believe to be their duty. As for the sentiment, I think modern audiences may feel that the heroine is somewhat excessively victimized, and that her domestic problem does stack the cards a little bit to suit the morals and mores of 40 years ago. How does Justice survive today? Pretty well, considering some of the things that have happened since. Galsworthy doubtless thought he was plumbing the uttermost depths of man's inhumanity to man in prisons. He could not have foreseen Belsen and Dachau. But that was part of the innocence he shared with everyone else in those days. The fact remains that his expose of the horrors of solitary confinement did have an effect in reforming the British judicial and prison system. And also, as we who listen today are doubtless discovering, Justice is still a moving and eloquent piece of work. Its characters stir one to indignation and pity, and its total effect has something of the timelessness of any work in which a great heart and great art are warmly blended.
Thank you, Mr. James Hilton. Now, our adaptation of the Galsworthy play Justice with Nigel Bruce's Coxon continues from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
All right, keep moving. This is no picnic. No talking now. Keep moving.
Shut the window, Woodburn.
Yes, sir.
Which one tried to escape?
Mooney, sir. Tall, raw-boned fellow, about 56.
Oh, an old hand, isn't he?
4 terms of penal. You'd think an old lag like him would have more sense by now. Occupied his mind, he said. Breaking in and breaking out. That's all he think about.
How far did he get?
Saw the window bar about, quarter inch.
Mm. Whose cell is next to him?
One side, O'Cleary.
The other?
Falder, first offense.
How's the atmosphere in the cell block?
Curious thing. You seem to know when one of these tries at escape goes on. There's a regular wave of restlessness.
Mm-hmm. Things seem quiet enough now?
Yes, sir. But the Irishman, O'Cleary, began banging on his door this morning. Little thing like that will upset the whole lot, you know.
Yes, yes, I've seen it with horses before thunder. Run right through a cavalry line.
Morning, Governor.
Oh, Chaplain Miller. I wanted to have a word with you.
Oh?
Can you account for the state of the men last day or two?
I hadn't noticed. Of course, they all seem to have an extraordinary perverted willpower. Nothing to be done until it's broken.
Not much after that, I'm afraid.
Excuse me, sir, but there's a visitor outside.
I'm seeing no one.
I explained that, but he insists on seeing you. From some law firm.
Shall I
put him off?
A law firm?
Best show him in.
Yes, sir. Go in. Warden Danson will see you.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'm sorry to trouble you, gentlemen. My name is Coxon, the firm of James and Walter Howe, well known in the law.
I see.
It's about a young man you've got in here.
We have a good many.
The name of Falder, the forgery.
Oh, yes. You remember him, Chaplain? First offender.
Well, the fact is, sir, his sister asked me to see him. My husband won't let me go, she says. Well, I take an interest in him. He was our junior. I go to the same chapel, so I couldn't very well refuse.
I'm afraid he's not allowed a visitor. You see, he has to serve a month's solitary confinement. They all do it first.
But he was shut up alone for 2 months waiting for his trial. He was lonely then. You see, his sister, she's worried about his health and...
Yes,
sir?
Send for the doctor.
Yes.
Perhaps you'd feel better if the doctor would reassure you about his condition.
Well, sir, I said...
You're not accustomed to prisons, it would seem, sir.
No, Parson. But they're pitiful places. I visited him once before he came here. I told him then, be patient, William. Patient, he said. A day here is longer than a year outside. He held his hand up to his face and I could see the tears trickling through his fingers. It wasn't nice.
Falder. He's the nervous young man, isn't he? Not Church of England, I think.
No, sir.
Too bad.
He's not married, is he?
No, but there's a party that he's very much attached to. Not altogether commis foes, the French say. It's a sad story, gentlemen.
If it wasn't for drink and women, sir, this prison might well be closed.
Yes, but it preys on my mind.
Oh.
Well, it's like this. The woman had a nasty, spiteful fellow for her husband, and she left him. The fact is, she was going away with our young friend. Not nice, but I've overlooked it. Well, after the trial, she said she'd earn her own living apart and wait for him. About a month later, she came to me. I don't know her personally, mind you. And she said, I can't make a go of it. I'm very much reduced, she said, and she has lost flesh. Well, I'll have to go to the workhouse, she said. No, I said, no. I've got a wife and family, but I'd sooner spare you a little myself than have you do that. Really, she said, she's a nice creature. I can't let you do that. I think I'd better go back to my husband. Well, gentlemen, I happen to know that he's a spiteful fellow. He drinks. But I didn't like to persuade her not to go back to him.
Certainly not.
Yes, but I'm sorry now. The lad's got 3 years to serve. And I want things to be pleasant with him.
The law hardly shares that view.
Well, he's all alone there, by himself. I'm afraid it'll turn him silly. Nobody wants that, I suppose. He cried when I saw him. I don't like to see a man cry.
It's a very rare thing for them to give way like that.
Well, I kick dogs.
Indeed.
Yes, and I'll say this. I wouldn't shut one of them up by himself week after week, not if he'd bit me all over.
No, unfortunately, the criminal is not a dog. He has a sense of right and wrong.
Yes, well, it's a fine way to make him feel it.
Gentlemen, please. I recommend you to all those who've had more experience than yourself to know what is best for prisoners.
Well, I know this young fellow. I've watched him for 2 years. He's neurotic. He's got no stamina. If he's kept there shut up by himself without a cat for company, it'll do him harm. I said to him, where do you feel it, Will? I can't tell, Mr. Coxon, he said. But sometimes I feel like breaking my head against the wall. Now, that's not nice.
Here.
Yes, yes.
Dr. Clements, this is Mr. Coxon.
Oh, how do you do, Doctor?
Mr. Coxon thinks the solitary is telling on 3007, Doctor. Name's Falder. Young, thin fellow, star class. What do you say, Doctor?
Oh, he doesn't like it. It's not doing any harm. It's only a month.
But he was weeks alone before he came here, Doctor.
Well, we can always tell. He's lost no weight since he came here.
Well, I'm thinking of his mind.
Well, his mind's all right. Nervous, rather melancholy, but he hasn't lost an ounce. I'm watching him.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
It's just at this time, sir, that we're able to make some impression on them. I'm speaking, of course, from my special standpoint.
Well, I didn't come here to be unpleasant, of course, but it...
It's a bit awkward. His sister...
Mr. Coxon, I'll make a point of seeing him today.
I'm very much obliged, sir.
If any sign of injury to his health shows itself, his case will be reported. That's fully provided.
Of course, sir, what you don't see doesn't trouble you, but I don't want to have him on my mind. I've been having dreams lately.
I think you may safely leave it to us.
Oh, I thought you'd understand me. I'm a plain man, never set myself up against authority. Nothing personal meant, Parson. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day. Good day, Mr. Coxon.
Our friend seems to think a prison is like a hospital.
Excuse me for intruding again, gentlemen. It's just one thing. This woman... I suppose I mustn't ask you to let him see her. It'd be a rare treat for both of them. Of course, she isn't his wife, but... he'd be quite safe in here. Oh, they're a pitiful couple. You couldn't make an exception, no?
As you say, my dear sir, I couldn't make an exception.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm sorry to trouble you, gentlemen.
So goeth the plain man. Plain man, indeed. Come and have some lunch, Clemens.
This Moni's cell?
Yes, sir.
Open up.
Cap off. Out here.
Did you make this saw, Moni? Come on, speak up.
It passed the time, sir.
Your regular work doesn't keep you busy, then?
It don't occupy the mind, sir.
You might find a better way than trying to escape.
What way, sir? I keep my hand in against the time I get out. What's the good of anything else to me at my time of life? You know that, sir. I'll be in again within a year or two after I've done this stretch. I don't want to disgrace myself when I'm out. You've got your pride keeping this prison smart. Well, I got mine. I must be doing a bit of this. It's no harm to anyone. Why, I was 5 weeks making that saw. A bit of all right it is, too. We'll get cells now, I suppose. 7 days bread and water. Of course, you can't help it, sir. I know that. I put myself in your place.
No, look, Mooney. If I pass over this, will you give me your word not to try it again? Well?
It's like this, sir. I've got 6 weeks to do in here alone. I can't do it and think of nothing. You made me a sporting officer, but I can't deceive another gentleman. Another 4 hours, and I'd have had that bar sawed through.
And then court punishment. Is it worth it?
Yes, sir. It is.
Yeah. 2 days' sales, bread and water.
Thank you, sir.
Lock him up. Can't help admiring a man who tries to escape. This folder?
Yes, sir.
Open up.
Yes, sir.
Folder? Folder, come out. It's Gordon Vanson.
Sir?
Now, tell me, Folder. Can't you settle down?
Yes.
You know what I mean, Folder. No use running your head against a stone wall, is it?
No, sir.
Well, then?
I tried, sir.
Can't you sleep?
Very little, sir. Between 2 o'clock and getting up to the worst.
Oh, how's that?
I don't know. I was always nervous, but now everything seems to get such a size.
Oh, that's morbid, me lad. Pull yourself together.
Yes. Yes, I got to, I suppose.
Think of all these other fellows.
Well, they're used to it.
They all went through it the first time.
Yes. I suppose I shall get to be like them in time.
That rests with you, Folder. A man can make himself what he likes.
Yes.
Do read.
I don't take the words in anymore. I know it's no good, but I keep thinking of outside.
Some private trouble?
Yes.
Mustn't think about it.
Mustn't think about it. Are you made of stone?
That will be all, Folder.
Yes. I'm quite all right in my head, sir. No need to worry.
I'm sure. All right, Woodard. Yeah, he'll bear watching, that one. Got the animal look in his eye.
Nice Holder, Mr. Carr. 6 months.
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining Holder.
1 year.
Pray, my son.
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining B-O-7.
Captain Lothwaite.
Pray.
Restraining
B-O-7.
Captain Lothwaite.
Pray.
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining
Captain Lothwaite.
Restraining Captain Lothwaite.
Your lunch hot enough, Mr. Coulson?
Oh, it's all right, thank you, sweetheart.
Well, you don't seem to be relishing it like you used to in the old days.
Well, stomach's been a little rusty these last 2 years.
Ever since he was sent away.
Something in the outside office. Now, be a good fellow, will you, sweetheart?
Yes, sir. Oh. Hello. It's you.
Yes.
Why, it must be 2 years since we had the pleasure. What have you been doing with yourself?
Living.
I hope our friend's back from the country. His time's been up about 3 months, if I remember.
3 and a half.
I was awful sorry about that. The governor ought to have given him a chance. He made a mistake, if you ask me.
May I come in?
Mr. James ought to have given him a chance. And I say the judge ought to have let him go. They've forgotten what human nature's like, they have. But we haven't.
I'd like to see Mr. Coulson.
Well, no, I don't write.
Gee,
no,
it's very...
Well, who is it, sir? It's you.
I'd like to see you.
Well, now, I can give you a minute. Here. Sit down. You may leave us, sir.
Yes, sir.
The family will?
Yes, I'm not living where I was.
I hope things are more comfortable for you at home.
I couldn't stay with my husband after all.
Well, you haven't done anything rash, I hope. I should be sorry if you'd done anything rash.
I've kept the children with me.
Well, I'm glad to see you. You've not heard from the young man since he came out, I suppose?
Yes, I ran across him yesterday.
I hope he's well.
He can't get anything to do. It's dreadful to see him. He's just skin and bones.
Oh, dear me, I'm very sorry to hear that. Didn't they find him a place when his time was up?
He had it only 3 weeks.
Well, I'm sure I don't know what I can do for you. I don't like to seem unhelpful, but...
I can't stand his being like that.
Well, perhaps you couldn't do something for him till he finds his feet again.
Not now. I could have, but not now.
I'm sure I don't quite understand.
That's all over. Now I've seen him.
I'm a family man. I don't want to hear anything unpleasant. If you'll excuse me, I'm rather busy.
You're busy of all the... I'd have gone home to my people, but they never forgave me for marrying Honeywill. I was only a girl, you see, when I married him.
Well, I did hope that you'd have got on better with him after I spoke to you.
He used me worse than ever. He couldn't break my nerve, but I lost my health. And then he began knocking the children about. I wouldn't go back to him now if he were dying.
No. We mustn't be violent.
I hate him.
What did you do after you left him?
Try the same thing as when I left him before. Making skirts. Cheap things. It was never more than 10 shillings a week. Buying my own cotton and working all day. I hardly ever got to bed before midnight. I kept at it 9 months. Well, I'm not fit for that. I wasn't made for it. I'd rather die.
No, my dear woman, we mustn't talk like that.
Starvation for the children, too. I soon got not to care. He used to be too tired.
And what happened then?
My employer happened. He's been happening ever since.
Oh, dear. I never came across a thing like this.
He's treated me all right. But I've done with that. I never thought I'd see Will again. It was just by chance I met him at Hyde Park. He told me all about himself. Oh, Mr. Coulson, give him another chance.
Well,
if he could only get here where there's nothing to be found out.
Well, we can't have anything derogatory in the firm.
I have no one else to go to.
Well, I'll speak to the partners. But I don't think under the circumstances...
He came with me. He's down on the street.
Oh, no. He shouldn't have done that. Not until he's sent for. I can't promise anything, of course, but I will...
It'll be the saving of him.
Well, I'll do what I can. As it happens, we have got a vacancy.
Would you see him?
No, not till I see how things are. What is your address?
83 Millinger Street.
83 Millinger Street. Oh. Very well, now, good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, what a business.
Looks a bit seedy, doesn't she? She say anything about Folder?
Yeah, I may be having him rather seedy.
Oh?
Well, mind you, treat him like you would have him treat you in a similar position.
Oh, naturally, sure.
That's right. When a man's down, never hit him. It isn't necessary. Give him a hand up. That's a metaphor. I recommend it to you in general life. It's sound policy.
Oh, we need a clock. You think the partners will take him on again?
Well, I can't say, but...
Now, who's that come in? Blimey, it's him. It's Walter.
Oh, that's very naughty of her. Tell him to call again. I don't want to...
He's coming right here.
Come here.
Hello, Mr. Cook.
Oh, now look here. I'm glad to see you, Paula. I'm glad to see you. Shake hands. How's your health?
I'm alive.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, about this matter, I don't like doing anything out of the ordinary. It's not my habit. I'm a plain man, and I like everything smooth and straight. But, I promised your friend to speak to the partners, and I always keep my word.
Oh, I just want a chance, Mr. Coxon. I've paid for that job 1,000 times and more, Lord knows. That's how I weighed more when I came out than when I went in. They couldn't weigh my heart.
You're not got heart disease?
Oh, they passed me sound enough.
But they got you a place, didn't they?
Yes, until one day the other clerks got wind of it. I couldn't stick it.
Easy, my boy.
I had one small job after that. It didn't last.
Oh, how was that?
Well, there's no use deceiving you. The fact is, I seem to be fighting against something all the time now. I didn't act as I ought to have about references. Well, what could I do? You have to have them. And that made me afraid, and I left. Becca, I'm afraid all the time now.
Well, won't your sister help you?
Oh, when I went there, husband offered me £25 to go to Canada with. I said, good riddance, eh? No, thanks, you keep the £25. Friendship's a queer thing when you've been where I've been.
Well, will you take the £25 from me? Quite without prejudice. I mean it kindly.
You don't think they'll take me back?
Well, you aren't looking quite the thing, you know.
Well, I've been sleeping in parks. The dawns aren't all poetry there.
Yes, I'm sure we're all very sorry for you.
Yeah, that's what I found, Mr. Coxon. Awfully sorry for me, but it doesn't do to associate with criminals.
Oh, come. Now you're calling yourself names. Put a good face on it.
Well, it's easy enough to put a face on it when you're independent. You try it when you're down like me. They talk about giving just desserts. Well, I think I've had a bit over.
Well, I do hope they haven't made you a socialist. Oh. Nobody wishes you harm.
No, but they're down, you're just the same. Oh, this feeling, it crushes me.
Now, you must try to take it quietly. I'm sure I've often had you in my prayers. You leave it to me. I'll use my gumption and tackle the partners when they're in a good mood. Now, here's your cat, my boy.
Why are we here?
Oh, Mr. James and Mr. Walter, I didn't expect you quite so soon. I've just been having a talk with this young man. I think you'll remember him.
Quite well. How are you, Folder? Very glad to see you again, Folder.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Folder, you might go in the other room a moment and I'll have a word with Mr. James. You know the way?
Yes, sir.
Well, Coxon?
Well, I'm bound to tell you, sir, he's quite penitent. But there's a prejudice against him. You're not seeing him to an advantage this morning. He's undernourished. It's quite trying to go without your dinner.
Really, Coke?
Well, I wanted to ask you, I mean... Well, sir, he had his lesson. We know all about him, and And we do want a clerk.
A jailbird in the office? I don't see it. The rolling of the chariot wheels of justice. Never got that out of my head.
I've done nothing to reproach myself about in this affair. He's been... What's he been doing since he's come out?
Well, he's had one or two places of it, but he hasn't kept them. He's sensitive. He fancies that everybody's down on him.
Bad sign. Don't like the fellow. Never did from the first. Weak character written all over him.
I think we owe him a leg up.
He brought it on himself. The doctrine of full responsibility doesn't quite hold these days,
Father. You'll find it safer to hold to it for all that, my boy.
For oneself, yes, but not for other people.
Mind you, I don't want to be hard.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that, see. He seems to feel something all round him. It isn't healthy.
What about the woman, the one he was mixed up with? Seems I saw someone uncommonly like her outside as we came in.
Well, he has met her, sir.
Is she with her husband?
No.
Oh, Falder living with her, I suppose.
I don't know about that, sir. It's out of my business.
It's our business if we're going to engage him.
Well, I ought to tell you, sir, I had the party here this morning.
I thought so. No, my dear boy, it won't do. Too shady.
Well, the two things together do make it very awkward for you, Mr. James. I can see that.
I don't know what we have to do with his private life, Father.
If he'd make a clean sweep of it, I might consider.
Will you speak to him, Mr. James? I think he'll see reason.
Oh, very well. Ask him in.
Very good, sir.
Come here, Falder. Come in here, will you?
Sir?
Now, look here, Falder. My son and I would like to give you another chance, but there are two things. First, it's no good coming here as a victim. If you've any notion you've been unjustly treated, get rid of it.
No, I've no notion, sir, but let me say, if we'd been treated differently the first time, not a quarter of us would have ever got to prison.
I've my doubts of that.
Yes, sir. So I found.
My good fellow, don't forget that you began it.
I never wanted to do wrong.
Perhaps not, but you did.
Well, it knocked me out of time, don't you see? That is, I'm not what I was.
This isn't very encouraging for
you. Well, he's putting it very awkwardly, Mr. James.
I meant it.
If you'd lay aside all those thoughts, Falder, and look to the future.
Yes, sir. But you don't understand what prison is.
That'll pass, Falder. Time's merciful.
And I hope so, sir.
Now, my boy, what you've got to do is to put the past behind you and build yourself up a steady reputation. And that brings me to the second thing. This woman you were mixed up with. You must give us your solemn word to have done with her. There's no chance of your keeping straight if you're going to be in with such a relationship.
Have done with? Well, sir, don't you understand it? It's the one thing I've looked forward to. And she, too, I couldn't find her until last night, but now...
It's painful, Father. But you must see, man, that it's impossible for a firm like this to... No, give her up and you can come back. Not otherwise.
I couldn't. I'm all she's got. She's all I have.
I'm sorry, Falder.
But don't you see what it means? All I've been through, getting broken up, my nerves are in an awful state. All that for nothing. I did it for her.
If she's anything of a woman, she'll see it for herself, and she won't drag you down. If there were a prospect of your being able to marry her, it might be another thing.
Marry? Well, that's been the whole trouble from the beginning. If she could divorce him, if someone would only help her, Mr. Walter... You know the law. He must have given her enough cause.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Falder.
Would you help her?
I might.
Oh, Mr. Walter.
Well, she's down in the street. I can call her from the window if you'll see her.
Well, Father,
let her come up.
Mr. James, give her a chance. I'm afraid she's not been what she ought to have been, but give her a chance.
There's been nothing between us to prejudice the case, I swear it. Well, last night, we only just sat in the park.
Excuse me, sir. Mrs. Honeywell is outside.
Oh, show her in.
Go in.
Shut the door, Sweetle.
Yes, sir.
Young woman, we've asked you to come up here because there are certain facts to be faced.
Yes, sir.
I've promised to take Falder back if he'll make a fresh start. Oh. This is a matter that requires courage, ma'am.
Ruthie. Mr. Walter Howe is good enough to say he'll help you get a divorce.
Well, I should certainly...
I hardly think that's practicable, Falder.
Oh, but, sir, he did say...
Mrs. Honeywell, you're fond of this fellow.
I love him.
Then you wouldn't want to stand in his way, would you?
I could take care of him.
The best way to take care of him is to give him up.
Give me up? But there's no need. But she can get a divorce. Ruthie, tell him that there's been nothing between us.
No.
You see, we can keep apart until it's over. If you'll only help us.
You see the thing plainly, Mrs. Honeywell. You see what I mean.
I see.
Ah, there's a sensible woman.
The situation would be quite impossible.
I want to do the best for him.
I don't understand. What is this? Ruth, you're not going to give me up.
We can get... Well, there's nothing between us now, I swear it.
I believe you, Falder.
Well, then...
Face it, Falder.
Oh, just now you were going to help her get a divorce. She's done nothing outside the law. She... Oh, no. No. Ruth, you've not been...
I had to live somehow.
I'll give you your chance, Falder. Don't let me know what you do with yourselves, that's all.
Oh, Ruth. Ruth. Oh. Oh, God. Help me.
We'd better leave them alone.
There's somebody coming to the other office, sir.
We'll go out there.
Mr. James Howell, Detective Sergeant Wister, sir. You remember me. I arrested one of your clerks here about 2 years ago.
I remember you.
I thought perhaps you might know his whereabouts.
Well, we're not responsible for his movements, you know that.
Quiet, Coulson. What do you want with him?
It's a matter of obtaining employment with a forged reference.
Well, we're very busy at the moment. If you could make it convenient to call
again... I've always been a servant of the law, Sergeant, but I dislike peaching. In fact, I can't do such a thing. If you want him, you must find him without us.
You must.
I can't, I tell you.
Might I ask who's in there?
You might not.
And I'm afraid I'm a just...
No, don't go in there. Don't go in there.
Well, now. Keep back, please. All right, Calder. Come along.
Let him go this time, for heaven's sake.
I couldn't even if I wanted. The law...
The law! Blast the law!
Come along.
No need for that. I'll go.
Will, look at me.
Just get me away from here. Get me away from here!
That finishes him. It'll go on forever now.
Come on.
Look out! Look, catch the woman, she's fainting.
Tweedle,
see what happened out
there. Here, my dear, here, sit in this chair.
Any bandages?
Yes, I got to drop my desk here.
I'll try to revive her while I see what happened out there.
There's no need for that, sir. Here they come.
Good Lord.
Easy now. Put him down here. He jumped off the stair. Neck's broken. Must have been mad to think he could give me the slip like that. And what was it? Just a few months?
Is that all? Mm. What a desperate thing. Oh. Sweetle, run for a doctor.
I will, sir.
How's the woman? Oh.
She's coming too.
Keep her away from him.
Here. Sit down. Sit down, my dear. Please.
Get away from him.
She's insane.
What is it? What is it, Will? He's not breathing. Oh, my baby. My pretty. No. She's not dead. He's not dead.
There. Poor, dear woman. No one will touch him now. Never again. He's safe now. Safe with gentle Jesus.
The curtain falls on the sixth in our series of dramatizations of outstanding works by modern British and American authors. Today, the NBC University Theater has brought you the John Galsworthy play, Justice, as adapted for radio by George Leppert. Our intermission commentator was Mr. James Hilton, and Nigel Bruce was starred in the role of Cookson. Mr. Bruce can currently be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, Julia Misbehaves. Today's cast included Dan O'Herlihy, Hugh Thomas, Alma Lawton, Ben Wright, Tom McKee, Eric Snowden, Crawford Kent, Ramsey Hill, John Hoyt, Raymond Lawrence, and Donald Morrison. Next week at this time, the NBC University Theater turns to the work of an American author, Sinclair Lewis, with an adaptation of his novel, Aerosmith, with Van Heflin, star of the MGM production, The Three Musketeers, in the leading role. Productions of the NBC University Theater are currently being used in conjunction with college home study courses in Anglo-American fiction under NBC's National College by Radio plan. This plan permits NBC listeners to obtain college-supervised, organized education at home by means of radio listening and supplementary study. For full information about the authors and how to take advantage of this home study plan, which is currently being developed at the University of Louisville and elsewhere, send a penny postcard to College by Radio Courses, National Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. That's College by Radio Courses, National Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. Your director was Andrew C. Love. Original music for Justice was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. This program came to you from Hollywood. You're invited to NBC's Sunday Night Party. 2.5 rollicking hours of entertainment tonight. Begin with Ozzy and Harriet, then listen and laugh straight through with Jack Benny and his gang, The Adventures of Phil Harris and Alice Faye, followed by Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Fred Allen tops off the merriment with tonight's guest, Doc Rockwell. Remember, for the best time of your life, the best time is tonight on most of these NBC stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.